chapter 19, beginning with the first verse. We'll have to proceed a little slowly now, because in this part there's quite a bit to be considered. So we'll have a reading of only one verse, Sister Carol.
Then Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him.
Two verses, pardon.
And the soldiers platted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe.
Any comments on this verse?
Well, it's been apparent thus far that Pilate was reluctant to agree to the crucifixion of Jesus, so I guess it is assumed that this was a measure he thought might satisfy their bloodthirsty cravings, and that then he might be able to release Jesus.
In other words, this was a ploy or strategy on Pilate's part, thinking they would be pacified if they could see him being really beaten. Then he wouldn't have to crucify him. All right. Any other comment? Yes.
We can see in this verse that Jesus was not treated as a human equal. He was treated like a slave, because the only slaves could be scourged before even the sentence, before the trial. So Jesus was just arrested and scourged it, and they made that, and after the trial came. So it is according with the prophecy that Jesus came in the lowly class.
We had read, though, in the previous chapter that Jesus did have a kangaroo trial before Annas and Caiaphas, the high priest of Israel, and even another council very, very early in the morning where the Sanhedrin was present. So as far as the Israel is concerned, there was some kind of a trial, but it was slanted only one way. It was determined that he was going to die. The verdict was in before they really questioned him. But as far as Pilate's concerned, they just wanted him to just finish it, execute him. They were not looking for a trial as far as Pilate was concerned. They were saying, he's worthy to be crucified. We can't do it, you do it. It's our holy day. We've read this in the previous chapter. All right, now Pilate was reluctant to do this. He could see jealousy, envy, and other things on behalf of those who were accusing Jesus. But now you'll notice that the way they decorated Jesus here, they plaited or plaited, it says, a crown of thorns. So that would have to be woven in and out, a circular crown. But of course, it had thistles and thorns in it. And then they plunked it on his head. I don't think he just said it gently. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for this. And also, they put on him a purple robe, it tells in this account. In another account, it says scarlet. But I think the robe is both scarlet and purple, as frequently as these robes are lined. They're lined in such a way that the inner lining is as good as the outer surface as far as appearance goes. Probably the inner lining was scarlet and the outer purple. And it both could be seen because of the cape-like nature of this coat. Yes?
I'm going along the lines of that Pilate didn't want to kill Jesus. In the last chapter, we talked about how he was trying to get out of killing Jesus and talk the people out of it. And I think the scourging was one part of that, where he thought that he would appease the people just by scourging Jesus, and then maybe they would feel that was enough. And yet that was in fulfillment to prophecy in Isaiah 50, verse 6, where it says, I gave my back to the smiters and my cheeks to them that plucked off the hair. I hid not my face from shame and spitting. So here Pilate thought he was doing what might prevent Jesus from being killed, and yet that was all part of what had to be done to be fulfilled.
I've appreciated how on other occasions you pointed how necessary all these details were. For instance, in verse 2, for Adam, Jesus to actually pay the penalty for Adam, that crown of thorns had a part because the curse was put on Adam that out of the ground he would till out of the ground with the thorns and thistles, and Adam was the king, so Jesus had to take his role as a king here in defense of this grace.
Yes, we have tried in the past to show that Jesus didn't have to die just merely as a man, perfect man for Adam, but he also had to have other things happen to him. He had to die as a king. And they were doing it mocking. They were not, this wasn't to flatter Jesus. This was to make folk fun of him. And so the title king of the Jews, Adam, was a king. Over the animals, as well as he was the head of his own family and a potential future race that would come from his loins. And so the thorns being a part of the curse, he had to experience the curse, not just merely die. We tried to part that is as important, his feeling the curse, as well as dying as a perfect man to be that corresponding Christ. So, all right, now, any other thing with regard to this before? Perhaps the next few verses can also be a review of verses 1 and 2. Let's read 3 and 4, please, next.
And said, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they smote him with their hands. Pilate therefore went forth again and saith unto them, "Behold, I bring him forth to you, that ye may know that I find no fault in him."
He was questioned twice by Pilate. He had an audience with him and then went out, and then again there was an audience with him. This is like coming near, this is the end almost. This is just the final touches before him being remanded to crucifixion. Yeah, but to Pilate.
Pilate first, then yeah. Herod, and back again to Pilate.
Yes. Well, here, of course, John is the last of the four Gospels. In the other Gospel accounts, there are details furnished that John just overlooks, apparently feeling there's been enough said on what the other evangelists had said, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But he adds details that he thinks are quite significant that might have been omitted with regard to the other evangelists. And so he comes quicker to a conclusion here. Now, the ones who did this, notice, they put on the robe, they put on the crown. Does that suggest about this soldiery, something about them, for them to do this?
They would have had to be informed of the charge against Jesus, even not had a mock him.
All right. And that suggests, remember when Jesus was taken in for this supposed private audience with Pilate, we suggested that there were others there. His bodyguards, for instance. They would never let him alone, you know, without bodyguards. A Roman representative in the midst of a hostile province. Pilate would have the soldiery, and it's to them they were given, he was given over to them to be scourged. So they were present, we believe, and heard Jesus said, when Pilate said, "Art thou a king of the Jews?" And he said, "Yes, thou sayest, I am. To this end I was born," and so forth, previous chapter. But so we believe they heard what the charges were and were within earshot of this conversation. But it also shows, too, how hardened these men were and accustomed to doing such butchery as crucifixion.
Yes, and
and scourging. So that this callousness is manifested later when we come to the cross, when he actually comes to the crucifixion.
Brother Frank?
Yes.
At the point, you know, when Jesus was crucified, Pilate had the sign put over his head, King of the Jews, which would be a real, like thorn in the flesh of the Jews, to have that sign there. So presumably that was done intentionally as a dig to those who were trying to have Jesus crucified. Do you suppose that this whole, like as it were, mockery of Jesus in terms of putting the robe on and the crown of thorns and so on, from Pilate's viewpoint, was also meant to be a mockery, not just of Jesus, but of the Sanhedrin, the scribes and Pharisees?
Well, I don't know, but I had the feeling myself that when he handed them over, this was a customary procedure, that they would think of the robe and the crown and give him the criticism, hail, King of the Jews, that I don't think Pilate was in the background ordering that. I don't get that impression. I get it that the soldiers did it on their own. They're cruel and hardened, and they sadistically inclined to do the things they did. He just let matters take the course that the scourging itself, let alone the other details, would be, he thought, sufficient to satiate their animosity to Jesus. But of course it wasn't. They wanted his death. They didn't want his punishment. And that's just the impression I get, that it wasn't designed on his part. But he was impressed with this private conversation. I think he was impressed because that sign, he says, they wanted him to take that sign down. Oh, no. He says, what I've done, I've done. At that, he was firm on. He gave in on the other, but not on that sign. Hail, King, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. Yes?
I was going to say, it impressed me in reading through this last week. Chapter 18, verse 38, here in verse 4, will occur again in verse 6 and again in verse 19. The repetition of Pilate saying, he found no fault in Jesus, and saying it publicly.
Yes, for the record's sake, and it's true, he was a spotless Lamb of God, was he? I mean, it just points it up that the charges were false charges. Yes. Yes. Pardon me.
I think that the procedure of the court, because it was the court, not federal, but high court, because in that province the Pilate occupied like this position. And I was in the high court, and I think that there is not like this just given to them, to the soldiers, and what they will do this, because there is not, I will tell you what it means. The soldiers in guard and in prison, they are tired to do work. It's work. To beat someone, to do something, is a job that they must do, and to obey the order of what they receive from superior. So when they take you, they do. Some of them, they'll not do the full price that they endure. I was like that. They handle you. This means handle that you, they know what to handle. They have special trials. Some need to be beaten such amount. Some need to be beat with a rope, sometimes with a stick, somebody, even our time, they have different countries that like that. So I believe that this was a special, trial that they knew what kind the treatment. So they was doing the job. They was not just making, just fun because like a mob they want to do that. They was giving them a order to do this. So probably, I don't know who gave this. I do not, I just guess myself that like this, I'm not sure. that even the robe, as the purple robe, means that the kings only have that. When they was presenting before the people, they must wear that purple robe. So this is, was an accordant like a king. So the crown also like a king, but in the one earth.
Well, there has to be, to clarify the situation, I don't think they had a robe in abeyance for like the two thieves. The two thieves were also sent to the cross at this same time. I don't think a robe was put on them. But they improvised with the, probably one, these, incidentally, the centurions, especially the officers, have very beautiful garments. The heads, because he was over 100 people. And probably the centurion at the cross, I think that was a process that melted him down. A process of conviction coming through, where before they could have borrowed one of his robe, his cape, and adorned him as though a king. In other words, I don't think they had a box there with the robes in there that when a person came up that they put that on as a part of the procedure. I think they just grabbed, they couldn't get a crown, so they made a crown, a mock crown. They grabbed a robe that was the scarlet and purple robe, which I believe the centurion had. That's my own personal opinion. And they utilized that for this occasion, and then stuck a staff in his hand so that he was like a king. It doesn't mention the staff here, but it does in the other Gospels. So it's a coordination of the Gospels that we get how they proceeded. Like on the spur of the moment. This is something on the spur of the moment. He's a king, well, let's make him a king. And they kneeled down before him and mocked him in that way. Hail, King of the Jews, and they bowed before him, and then they give him a slap. Yes.
I agree with that, and I think that it was all in the occasion of the day that, like it says, that the chief priests and officers were there, and everyone was crying out. So everyone was kind of taken up in the idea of doing the mockery and the almost like a celebration of it. It became like a like a frenzy or like a demonstration kind of a thing, where a crowd now would get together and one would start to shout something or chant something, and then maybe one of the soldiers just saw it, or one of the officers just handed him the robe, or like you said, the centurion. So it all just became like a frenzy of things happening.
There's so much involved in this. We do feel the mood that prevailed had a bearing on his experience and intensified his suffering and shame. But it did tell earlier that they themselves, the Jews, did not want to go into that court lest they defile themselves in order to keep the Passover. So the multitude had nothing to do with this as far as the actual scourging. It was the soldiers that did the scourging, not the multitude. But they could be cheering on because they're witnessing this. And so the mood, like a stadium, like a football stadium or whatever it is, or some of these false wrestling matches, where the sadistic element comes out. They like brutality and blood. That they just feed on that. So this is it was a mob spirit. I think they improvise, it's like Satan can give you ideas for the occasion when it's needed. Fallen humanity, he can give you ingenious ideas of what to do, a persecution even. Things that had never been done before, let's try this or something. Very unusual. Not necessarily all premeditated. But it does show the hardness of the soldiers to do that, because this scourging was particularly brutal, and it usually involved 40 lashes, save one. And then on these strips of leather at the end, they had a piece of metal and several, so that when they hit the victim, as they would draw that back, it would rip the flesh off his back. Not just merely hit him with a whip, but it would leave a tremendous, and by his stripes we are healed, becomes very significant. I mean, when you think of this, humiliation to die as the ransom price, what he had to patiently endure, this suffering and shame, and to bear it patiently with the end in view that he, for this purpose he came to die in order to establish a sacrifice that would be effectual in the basis, as the basis for forgiveness for the world, and particularly Adam, his sin. So this is a sordid account. Yes, go on.
It helps us to appreciate even more the attitude of Jesus, that it was not only not, you know, Adam, in legally was Adam, or technically was Adam that he was dying for, but in the process he was helping not only the people who were scourging him, but the mob that was shouting for him. And he was giving an opportunity for these, even these people, to have life.
We can see the temptation of, he knew he possessed powers. He knew he had these powers. And when they said, come down from the cross, if you be the king, come down. But, you know, you just, you know, but no, he had to patiently go through the rigors of death, not spare himself. We read in the previous chapter, he said, know ye not that I could call a 12 legion of angels if I so desired, when they tried to apprehend him. And, so we get an insight into what Jesus actually suffered. And the reason I wanted to go just a few verses is for that to sink in. He didn't just merely die. It's the manner in which he died that becomes so meaningful. And it's been mentioned, I find no fault in him, Pilate had mentioned. Or is that four times you mentioned? Which is true. Now, let us read verses 5 and 6.
I'm reading from the Dyak Lab. Then Jesus came out wearing the Achan fine crown.
But pardon me, haven't you got a King James?
Yes, I do.
But read the King James for okay. The recording's sake.
Okay.
Then if you want to read something on the Dyak Lab, speak on the part that you would feel that would be interesting.
Then came Jesus forth, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate saith unto them, behold the man. When the chief priests, therefore, and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, crucify him, crucify him. Pilate saith unto them, take ye him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. Over here in the diagram, he said in verse 6, Pilate says, take him yourself and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. It's like they wanted Pilate to do their dirty work.
Yes. All right.
This wasn't like any court proceedings. We're normally used to seeing like how Oliver North that was on TV a few weeks ago, like that. But there was a lot of contention between Pilate and the priests and the officers. They were about, this had been going on all night long. Hey, the soldiers, Pilate, the only ones that were emphatic were the priests and the officers. They had a desired end, but Pilate really didn't, and the soldiers really didn't. And what I was going to say before was, you mentioned how Satan seized on that opportunity. His influence exhibited, but like this verse shows that when I think they were almost yelling, like they said, here he is, and they said, and they cried out. They didn't hear what he said, and they didn't see the thorns. They didn't see the robe. They just saw the end, that he was a threat to them, and they yelled. They didn't even hear Pilate say that, and he yelled right back. It was like to the, that was it. That was a, you know, coming close to the end. There was no rapport there at all, I don't think.
No, well, they had a closed mind, like you're saying. And when you have a closed mind, that's in the Holy Inquisition, Holy question mark, Inquisition, they thought they were doing God a favor by persecuting what they esteemed as heretics, so they would be completely hardened to the cries and moans of the victim. Of course, there are different kinds of soldiers here. We found earlier, when we read it, there were soldiers who apprehended Jesus in the garden, as well as a motley crew of other people that came with Judas to betray Jesus. But those officers there and all are not the same ones, I believe, who scourged him. These are Pilate's own cohort or bodyguard that would be stationed with him. So you have the priests had a contingent given to them for their purposes to keep order during their services and all. So they're two different kinds of officers. The same as watch the tomb when had it sealed. There were officers there, but those officers had to do with the priests, not with Pilate. And because when they saw the resurrection, they came to the priests and told them what had happened. That an angel came and rolled away the stone, and they paid them money to keep their mouths shut. So there are different kinds of officers, different kinds of people. It's very difficult to separate them to get a clear picture because we're prone to intermingle them, and the only way is that because we have the different accounts, the different gospel accounts, help to give us a different perspective of what actually went on at that time. But they certainly were on the sidelines, these others, wanting Jesus to be put to death. Yes?
Comment reprint 1898, page 160, that certainly would apply here. Religious fanaticism is the deepest, wickedest, and most conscienceless of hatred. It's been borne out in history. Yeah. And then a comment on this, behold the man. I didn't check it myself in Strong, but there was a green comment with the thought, is behold his countenance. Would that be the thought, particularly his face, his demeanor?
I would think it might take in several things, but ecce homo is this famous saying. Ecce homo, behold the man. It may be his bearing, his stature, and his composure, his dignity, in spite of all this humiliation, the way he bore up, patiently took it, and so forth. It certainly impressed Herod, who had a history. Don't forget, Herod was the one who killed the Galileans, and many of them didn't think anything of that. He's hardened, Herod, Pilate. But there are people who are very hardened, but yet want justice. That's a peculiarity, that they can be hardened, but they want to see that justice is, and they had to be very careful on this matter, because they could lose their office overnight. They ever incriminated somebody that the emperor or others higher than they would ask them later, why'd you do that? You know, they would be, so they'd be scared from that standpoint to dissatisfy their office. But their personal feelings may be another matter. I think he sensed that the man was innocent, that's Jesus, that if he assented too readily to his death, it may have repercussions. But finally, he had to, because the other gospel said about Caesar, now, if you don't do what we want you to do, we want your okay to crucify him. Now, if you're not going to do that, you know Caesar. You know what Caesar will do. I don't know if that's in here or not, is it? That comes, pardon me for going jumping the gun there. Yes, Brother Dolan, you wanted to say something first.
I think I was going to say I felt the same way that the sister did, because it reminded me a little bit first of all, he said, behold, he could have, you know, that word's in there, and it's like to look and consider what you're seeing, you know? There's something here to see, look at him. And I think it was the manner how he was dying, actually. You know, some of the American Indians that were persecuted and killed, there were accounts on how they died. And it was, you know, but I think in Jesus' case, and maybe the choice of the word behold there, he was trying to let them examine what are you doing? You know, look, what's there? I think that.
That's right. Dan, listen first. Yes, there's brother and then sister.
Me?
Yeah.
I can see in this Jesus is as a man, as he said, a man. He showed us the excellences of a dignity, who in him everybody could see a man, just a pure man, not a beast. When the situation as imperfect today, come in hardship, we very quickly we are changed from the calm to be a screaming or even fighting or even blaming or even whatever happening. So this is not representing as a human. It's easy to say when he is mad, he's like a lion, or like a wolf, or like anyone. But Jesus, he kept his dignity up to the end. He really represented the things the perfect man. And I think this is very good for us, a good example, that when we pass through the trials that will happen, we believe in the providential care of the Lord as his followers, that we need to keep ourselves, our dignity, to remain a man, resemble the image of God, to reflect it in us and ourselves, even when we are suffering, or something happened, even happened, so what? He still remain a man. So this is really a man, Jesus. Well,
it's interesting what you're saying, because you're not familiar with the studies that we've been having, which has been right along these lines, that we feel that our Lord's last days, that he has set an example, particularly for the feet members at the end of the age. There are reasons for this, but so that the way he talked, the way he answered questions, or is now you're calling about his composure, his behavior here, are all exemplary and give us lessons as to what we should do should we have, let us say, a public trial, that we should consider that this is the Lord's cause, not just us as a person, that we have to consider.
Thank you.
We have been doing this all along in the previous studies.
This because it's the text indicator.
You next, and then sisters.
Along the lines of Sister Gail's comment about the in Strong's, and Strong's, it is from, it's the word anthropos, and it's from two other Greek words, one meaning man and the other meaning the countenance, so that it does bear out that idea of looking at this man's countenance.
If
we
read Emmanuel, it says you have nothing. Such a man in all your land, I would say physically he had been a wonderful specimen, as well as his last specimen, that he was a very dignified, even to the end, not a man who lost his composure. And it was just unbelievable that they could be so hard in their heart, not secret.
He was a perfect man. He was a perfect man that's standing before them.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And also, when Jesus was captured in the mountain, when the crowd came, and when they saw Jesus, they fell back. They fallen down into the back. That means in this case also the inner light was a shine outside. So there's something different than ordinary man.
Yes. And for Pilate to discern this was something. I mean, he was most unusual. While I do think his countenance was, say, 90% of the situation here, I think everything about it, his composure, his stance, his manner, more embracive. The word countenance is used in a large sense and in a restricted sense in the scriptures. Sister Esther, you said yours. Anybody else?
We must have had a lot more fine qualities in him if he had only had the spirit, the right spirit, why he might have been.
Well, we're talking about this. We feel that Pilate got his retribution beforehand. I mean, after this, he was removed from office very quickly and had a pretty sad ending. Pilate. But so that in the next day, I think that more can be, he will be let off, I think, a little easier in the kingdom age. But he was responsible. But there are degrees of responsibility. Yes?
Just sort of like this study's going into, this is a detailed look and a setting for this. Mentioning all his countenance and his appearance and all like that, and I think he, when he was addressed by Pilate, he didn't just like ignore him. I think they had their eyes fixed right eye to eye, so that must have been something also, you know.
Well, he had a private audience with you're talking about Pilate now.
Yeah, I'm saying that he had occasion to be close to Jesus.
Oh yeah,
and quite a perfect man like that, just. He was just eye to eye with him. That would be quite an influence. Whether
when Jesus spoke to him and said, as much to say, you don't have to worry about me. He says, my kingdom is not of this world, else my servants would fight. He had a different calling, so he could see there's no threat in Jesus for his profession to be the king of the Jews. He's more or less saying in the future. Sometime in the future, and very indefinite, so it was no immediate threat to Pilate. Then it then probably, no doubt, like you say, in silently looking a person over, which he would certainly do. He would never gotten to his office just as an ordinary man, Pilate. He got there because he had certain administrative abilities and so forth in the first place. Yes, anyone else before we, yes?
But from this account, we can see that Pilate was in fear to lose anyway his position. Even he has all evidence that Jesus was not guilty, and still he provided to be crucified. And we see that many, even today, people who, they know the right, but they do.
Right. All right, now let's go then. Have we time?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We I don't know if we're going to get into this in another study or whatever, but can we say what we think Pilate represents in the with the feet members of the church, the persecution of the feet members of the church?
Yes, well, we've considered that, of course, you bring it up now, but in past studies, yes, we have considered that. Pilate, Herod, also the priesthood, and so forth. What their correspondences are.
So would we say that Pilate was a picture, like Herod was the picture of the civil authority that was kind of like a pawn in the hands of the religious leaders?
Yes. We have been studying John the Baptist, and we saw how Herod was finagled at his birthday party to make a rash promise, I'll give you whatever you want to half the kingdom, and never dreamed that the answer would be simply, I just want John the Baptist's head here on the charge. He never expected that. But all this was connived by Herodias. Salome did the dancing, but Herodias did the planning. And so this priesthood has been mentioned by different ones earlier in the study here. They wanted him to be put to death, but they didn't want to necessarily do the dirty work directly themselves. They wanted Pilate to do that on their behalf. So he would be the civil, like you were suggesting, the civil representative of authority. But reluctantly, being straightened into doing this task that was very unpleasant for him to do. Let's read two more verses, please. Yes.
It was interesting, though. While it was a matter of religion, Pilate was not concerned. I'm thinking of the future. But when it came to a matter of a sedition against the government of things, that's when it became more inflammatory in his own mind. So quite possibly in the future, the religion part is not the biggest question. It's what it might do to the downfall of government.
Well, we spoke earlier, we jumped the gun, like we said, but a little later on that comes up. That comes up, this other element where they twisted Pilate's arm and made him that he had to do it, whether he liked it or not. Let's read the next two verses, please.
The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and by our law he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God." When Pilate therefore heard that, saying, he was the more afraid.
All right. Now, any comment on this? Yes?
Well, the phrase more afraid is interesting, showing he had some fear of having Jesus crucified. Would this have followed his wife's dream of her answer? I had trouble integrating it. I wondered if that was a factor.
That there was some fear. We last study or the study before that, we made mention, even though it's not in the John account, how that Pilate's wife came to him. She had a dream in the night, and she said, "Have nothing to do with this man," you know, and that this may have made him feel that, being she had that experience, that, and then looking at him, there's something that was, there are forces at play here that he had, was nervous about, yet...
It was even, not even just nothing to do with this man, but nothing to do with this just man, was her dream.
Yeah.
So he could see how he was being railroaded, and when he heard that he was the Son of God, you know, the claim was that he was the Son of God, and putting all the pieces together, he probably began to believe in himself.
I'm inclined to believe that Pilate foresaw that when they said he is the Son of God, and then he became more afraid, he could see what the next step was. Because just a few verses later, they then put the question that I think he sensed was coming, that he feared to hear, and that they were working towards that end. Because when you say he claims to be the Son of God, and there's another interesting thing here, too.
He didn't claim to be God, he claimed to be the Son.
All right, that's one thing. We've been finding John's account very helpful with regard to rebutting the Trinity, because the Trinitarians use John more than any other gospel to prove, supposedly, that the triune God. But they only take a verse where we find a few verses earlier, a verse later. It entirely upsets their argument, the context. But there's another thing, too. This being called the Son of God was one of Caesar's titles.
Yeah.
Was a title of Caesar.
Yeah.
And starting with Julius Caesar. And so that he sensed what was happening, that they're going to pressure him on this point, and that he knew he couldn't take it. But he didn't. They didn't do it right immediately. Notice. He still wants an out. He still wants an out, but he's suspicious now what's going to happen. We have to read two more verses to begin to see some other things. Let's read 9 and 10, please.
And went again into the judgment hall and said unto Jesus, Whence art thou? But Jesus gave him no answer. Then said Pilate unto him, Speakest thou not unto me? Knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee, and I have power to release thee?
One more.
Jesus answered, "Thou couldst have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. Therefore, he that delivered me unto thee hath the greatest sin."
Several interesting things here, but all right, now let's question, comment. You notice he still wants an out, but he's frightened now, and this part strategy here too, because he takes this moment to have Jesus come privately to him again. Notice that this is a stratagem too, that when the question gets delicate and all, you try to distract attention, or break the continuity of thought by others, by an intermission. And then he calls them in to question them further. He still doesn't want to do it, but his worst fears are going to be realized when Jesus comes back. Now, notice that first, Jesus' procedure. He first refused to answer. He answered him not. What did Jesus, Pilate said, "Whence art thou?" But Jesus did not want to defend himself from the standpoint of getting released. He came to die. That's be the last thing. But there are certain things where you have to speak up, and there are other things you're supposed to keep your mouth shut. And this is very difficult to know when to do which. Because normally, being we're fallen, we do it just the opposite way that it should be done. We speak when we should be quiet, and we are quiet when we should speak. And here we see that Jesus' procedure, though, here, that when Pilate put a second question to him, "Don't you know that I have authority to crucify you or not?" Then he answered.
Yeah. Pilate knew that Jesus is from Nazareth, and probably he was acquainted by the movement that Jesus was preaching all over the Galilee and the Judea. It was because he was a procurator. He knew this, what this movement is going on. He knew that this is peaceful. But the question is indicated that seems that he believed in where he was suspecting that he is not from Nazareth. So he asked, "Where you are from?" He, because the thing that made him to be afraid, when he said he claimed that he's the Son of God, and he became afraid, and now he asked him, "Where you are from? Where you come from?" He expects to say, "Yes, I came from another planet, from the heaven, from the gods, or so ever that according to his mythology." But he saw in Jesus something different from this. And I think that, as you said, this is exactly Jesus didn't want to answer because he didn't want to be released. Yes, to that.
Yes, we had the previous lessons shown that Pilate would have had to know something because he wasn't sitting in that chair for nothing, and that he would have his representatives scouting the region with their ear to the ground to see what's going on. And Jesus certainly at this time was noised all abroad in Israel that this unusual person from Galilee, and he certainly would have known about him, just like Herod mentions. Herod knew about Jesus and thought he was John the Baptist raised from the dead. So there was some popularity with regard to Jesus. Certainly he would know something. The possibility that his claim might have some truth to it. I mean, if you look at the evidences, there is nothing to definitely disprove it. So if you have the thought that maybe this is the truth, even though he said, "What is truth?" and he broke off the conversation earlier, yet I think there was a little bit of doubt there of the possibility, and especially looking, behold the man. I mean, he just said,
but now, during his ministry, when the scribes and Pharisees would always come to him with a leading question when they try to entrap him with clever questions, he would always answer them with a scripture, but he knew their minds. So he knew Pilate's mind here, and just the correction was made about the power. to him. But then he knew how he was thinking and what was worrying him and troubling him. And he said, don't worry too much. He that delivered me unto thee is more going to be worse off than you. And even that response, so truthful to Pilate, went right to his core, even made him tremble a little more.
And it does show that Jesus felt there were different gradations of guilt or responsibility. When he says greater, he didn't say he had no sin. He said he had, that those that delivered them unto him had the greater sin. But he did not exonerate Pilate. We find that no matter how Jesus speaks, when he's off guard, caught suddenly, he answers so precisely true. It's astonishing that it's as though he's prepared for everything and has the answer. Where if we do that once in a 100 occasions, we were so happy and we're so excited because we did it once. We said this right thing. But that's not the usual case. We let opportunities go by or we muffle them through our lack of tact or whatever it might be. We're falling. But Jesus was. And that's what amazes me when I read it. His answer. Jesus' statements are just unusual. Have we time for anything further? Yes.
Question. How do we tie in chapter 18 where the Jews said that it is not lawful for us to put any man to death with this verse where it says that under their law, that they were seven. We have a law, and by our law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God.
We had already discussed that. It was to the effect, their excuse was not that they couldn't put him to death, like they stoned Stephen to death and other things. Under the law, they were allowed. But the peculiarity of this situation was it was at the Feast of Passover. And that they wanted to be ceremoniously clean, incidentally, put away all leaven. The Jew was to put it all away. So in that spirit of feigned holiness, they didn't want their hands soiled. They didn't even want to go into the judgment hall. They stood outside, but it was an open plaza so that they could talk, but not to step onto those stones there. The stones of pavement, the pavement it was called. So this is what, under the law, they're using the law as an excuse, even though the law gave them the permission to stone somebody to death or have them put to death when they were guilty of violating the law. So they're using it to suit their purpose, yes.
And yet they were the ones who picked the time period of when to crucify Jesus. They could have waited till after the Passover.
Yeah. They may have had different stratagem there too. I think they were nervous about with all the people there at that occasion that his followers also would be there. I think they were afraid if they waited, his popularity in coming in, "Hail, King of the Jews, thou Son of David, Hosanna to the highest," and all this raving, that if they let it go any further and waited till later, that might jeopardize their possibility, and he might also remove himself. Yes?
I was thinking that he already had gone into the temple once to cast the money changers out, yeah. And that caused a big commotion. If at Passover he did something, that would, I guess that would be a huge threat to them, so.
I think they had to, they felt we can't wait any longer. We had to, and then they had the trial at night when everybody's asleep, and they bring him at the sixth hour, 6 o'clock in the morning. They bring him to Pilate, so they practically get Pilate out of bed, as it were, for this trial. they're there and they're in a group. Here's a man. They're demanding an audience. They can't go in, so they must have talked pretty loud. They must have addressed him in a way that it could be heard into the recesses of Pilate's residence there, that he'd know that there was somebody outside. And then they said, we have here a man that's worthy of death. Yes, wait, oh, first over here.
So all these extenuating circumstances that make something like this even seem impossible, what's important is that this is just God's business, and the same, this went right according to every detail, jot and tittle, according to every plan, and it's the same God that Jesus, the reason he could answer every answer was because his mind was fixed with his Father's will, and it's that same Creator. It has opened an invitation to all of us. And it's just, not even that staggers your imagination. But as we read things like this, we can think
well,
of
see,
our own.
My point is this, that we believe that, for instance, angels have much more knowledge than we are because of their very nature with and their lifelong span. They've been living all down these generations. But that he was so far superior even to the angels, in that he could, without the divine nature, he still was a man, that under these circumstances, that his, there's more to this, and that we've had studies on the parables of Jesus, where they would question him on some matter, and then he'd answer with a parable. And that parable would be so deep that I personally feel that Jesus' wisdom far outshines Paul's logic. Paul is usually given the credit that he's given the liberty because the Holy Spirit had not been given and Jesus didn't want to waste his knowledge on people who were not even spirit-begotten, on spiritual things way over their head. But these simple parables would satisfy the principle that being violated or called the question, but in that parable, he had lessons far beyond it that had spiritual ramifications that in spite of his not being able to speak as freely, he says, I'd like to tell you a lot of things, but I can't. But nevertheless, in those simple parables, there's so much that you can see, they have spiritual applications that are very, very far-reaching. And that these were done when they were questioning him. I mean, usually we'd say, well, give me a half hour to get my thoughts together. You know, you go off and you want to quiet and you pray for wisdom and so forth, and then you come back and you're ready, see, somewhat. But here, there's no intermission. This is they ask a question, he has a response, a parable. So that everything he says, it's remarkable. That
you made a mention before that he was a perfect man. At the end of the his reign, when Satan is released for a little season, there will be many perfect men here on the earth at the very end of that time when Satan is released. And many of these answers, Satan will just hear these things for the last and final time. How many more times will he be talked to by a million, maybe, perfect men as he tries to short time
that's another subject we'd
like
to address
it.
I'd like to talk about that. Sister here.
Yeah, I don't want to backtrack too much, but the thought that Dawn brought out concerning the Jews not saying that they would not be able to kill him at that time, I believe basically the Pharisees and the scribes and the Sadducees were the instruments, or they were implementing this death of Christ, and they were aware so much to the point of who Christ was. They were so versed in the scriptures, they knew exactly when, they knew who he was, they knew when he'd come, but he was not convenient for them. So they felt that it was their duty to do away with him. He was threatening them. And I believe they picked this time of Passover specifically for the reason that they did not want to dirty their hands with the blood. But they were aware that their minds were already leavened by simply desiring the death of the Messiah. You know, I believe the majority of the Jews may not have been as as aware, but these people who were instrumental in his death knew exactly what they were doing by presenting this occasion at the Passover to Pilate.
Well, there are different degrees of responsibility of which we cannot really ferret out. We feel that certainly some were very responsible, but there are others who had other motivations involved in wanting his death, not so much that they believed in him, but jealous. This was a threat. If he gets popular, where's the priesthood? They'll be all turning to him. So there are different motives, but amongst those of the leaders, there were those who had a horrendous amount of responsibility, but there are others with less. And it says, like, for instance, in the account, I don't know if this is John, Joseph did not consent to his death. So Joseph of Arimathea was at one of these trials where he voiced his opposition to the general thinking of the thing. Then we know in life that there are people that you can get to in the mix in the group, and they voice an opinion, and they can get the furor of the people, whether it's the leadership or whether it's the mob outside, can get them to do things that later they wonder how they did it. Whether it's a lynching, for instance, say lynching somebody else, speak something and give what seems to be positive evidence, circumstantial evidence, they go out and murder somebody and then later find out it's the wrong person. And oh, are they so sad and so sorry. But they were caught up where they didn't reason things out. So the people, had they believed Jesus with any real depth, and were aware of what was being done, this kangaroo trial, they could have interrupted it. But they soon forgot, many of them consented in the final analysis. We give the story of the bullfighter who killed so many bulls in his life. And, oh, he's a real hero in Spain, without even getting damaged or his nice uniform and not... One day, the bull gets him and gores him and all, and now he's forgotten. That matador, he's been sullied. And they can even jeer that individual. If he comes back and he's wounded, he cannot have the dexterity he used to have. And it showed the fickleness. There was a book written on this many, many years ago that I had read. And it impressed me very deeply of the people, how one moment they're all for you, and then they can be turned like a faucet the opposite way, where they could jeer you and so forth. Well, here we have the same situation, that they're moved, but they didn't reason it out. And that's why Peter says, I wot not that ye did it in ignorance. Well, the ones who really were responsible to Jesus, they didn't do it in ignorance in the sense that sense. But others would have stopped it right then and there had they been as knowledgeable on this subject as they might have been. Somebody, did you have something?
I don't remember exactly that account, I just remember that even when they was not ignorant, because they when they choose to trial Jesus before Sanhedrin, they was choosing people who will be at Sanhedrin. Even Nicodemus wasn't over there. And he was asking why at night time, in a hurry, they was doing this. So they was not ignorant.
Well, it does mention Joseph of Arimathea not consenting. So he was there. He consented not to his death. But Nicodemus, we believe, also was one of the Sanhedrin, and there's evidence of that. But he changed. He at first was a little fearful. He went by night, but he then was very bold. Because as time went on, after that interview he had, he, in front of the whole nation, he and Joseph, took Jesus' body down from the cross. So Nicodemus, I don't think, consented. But it doesn't say one way or the other. It doesn't just say, ignores him, but it does tell about Joseph. Joseph took the leading role in that he was claimed pray for Caesar. I beseech you, give me his body that for burial. But Nicodemus helped Joseph take the body down from the cross. So that act showed that he was a changed man. In spite of the shame of Jesus professing to be the Son of God and being cursed as he had hanged on the tree, for them to take this cursed victim down from the cross was a tremendous step of courage. So I think these two turned out good, and we're very happy. And we went into that. The technique that Jesus used for Nicodemus was, he couldn't understand spiritual things, but he said something we felt that stayed with him. He says, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so the Son of Man must be lifted up. This is what he told Nicodemus. So Nicodemus then, when he's looking at this cross and he sees Jesus there and his body naked and twisted like a serpent on the cross, all deformed, it came through to him that Jesus predicted that that would be his fate and he would be lifted up and would draw all men to him. And it drew Nicodemus. He was thinking, you're a wonderful master. I know you have a lot of knowledge, but why, what's this kingdom about, this you're speaking about? So he's like a borderline, but this other. So Jesus, like we say, in these spur of the moments, not only gave accurate statements, but he knew how to reach men's hearts, that if they were of the right caliber, that they would properly respond. And he knew how to answer Nicodemus. So by Nicodemus going to Jesus, that's like being led of the Father to Jesus. And for him to take that, even if it's at night, which you normally think of as a coward and all, but no. He, just to take that initiative, he took a step and was rewarded for taking that step. And we believe that that's why I like the gospel so much. And I was turned off many years ago because there was a study in which the leader says, oh, there have been so many books on the life of Christ, he felt that it should be the divine plan. That's the only thing, the divine plan. Oh, no. His life was recorded for our benefit. Everything he did and said was very important, no matter what anybody says. I was surprised at the table. It was one other than myself. We were very much ashamed at that statement being made, because others, what they did. You don't go by what others do. It's what the Word of God means to you. Now, have we cut any time?
Yeah. We wouldn't think the sister said she probably will know what she means anyway. Luke 23:50 is in regard to Joseph, and that he consented not.
All right. I think we have to end this study here, right?
About 3 or 4 minutes if you want to take up the service.
Well, no, we don't want to get started now. This will be too long, right? Mm-hmm. No, not even 1 minute.